Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia. Today I'm bringing you the Skid Row Radio Breakfast Show from the 2nd of February 2012. The show consists of interviews and discussions. We have one long interview with Craig Isherwood, Secretary of the Citizens Electoral Council, and quite a lot of music. There is some harsh language in this show, I'm just warning you in case you find that sort of thing offensive. There's also some comedy from Doug Stanhope, which again contains a number of expletive terms, which you may find distressing. If you find it distressing, then you do find it distressing. But I'm sure you're grown up enough to handle it, and if you're not, I urge you to stop listening right now.
There's only two types of people who are against drugs. There's people who have never done drugs and the people who really sucked at doing drugs. And everyone else has to suffer. That's why the whole medicinal marijuana thing. I mean, I've done some benefits for them, but first of all, I'm not a pot smoker. I've tried it, gave it plenty of opportunities. It didn't work for me. If it works for you, have at it. But just the argument where it's a pro-drug argument, but the fact that they have to say it's, you know, this is just about medicine. No, if you're going to have a pro-drug argument, start the argument where it starts. It's my fucking business. Fuck off. I mean, you don't put that on the sign. You got to use tact and stuff that I don't have. That's why I'm not in charge of any of those things. But that's why they use the medicinal marijuana argument, because that... If you put it in a medical context, now old people are all sympathy and heartstrings. You know, we don't want to get high. This is really just about Jimmy with glaucoma. Bring out Milky Eye Jim. He gets to the old people, and old people see the milky eyes, and they go, my friend Fran from Normandy had milky eyes the last time I saw him, and I vote yes, right? And it's a bullshit argument, but it wastes too much time. Start the argument where it starts. I have the right to do whatever the hell I want to my own body. If it kills me slowly, happy for me, fuck you, clack, clack, stop me. Right? Start the argument, because you're wasting my time. You're gonna spend 25 years so Milky Eye Jim can get a government-subsidized bong hit of some dirt weed. I want to buy mushrooms at Walmart tomorrow. Let's fucking just fight this one out. All illegal narcotics are medicinal. Boredom is a disease worse than cancer. Drugs cure it. With little or no bad side effects if used as directed.
Take out the papers and the trash.
Yeah, that's called Yakety Yak. The coast is there. Before we had Doug Stanhope on Medical Marijuana, if you like that one. And Globo di Estando by Immortal Technique. You're listening to Workers Radio Sydney on 88.9 Radio Skid Row. It is almost time for the BBC. I don't know if I should put it on. I should maybe put on Max Kaiser. I think that would be much better. Anyway, I've got Harold Fenton from the Triff News Radio here, and Jim and myself, Jack Frost. Harold, what's been going on since the last week?
Good morning, Jack. Look, I'm going to come out swinging in the first round.
Also, you always do.
I want to make a statement.
Yep.
I'm here to incite lawful rebellion.
Yes.
And I want to make that perfectly clear.
Yeah.
But I want to explain what I mean by lawful rebellion. Now, I studied some political philosophy at university, people like Hobbes, Locke, Hume, and the concept of the social contract is one that many people aren't aware of these days, but it is actually a cornerstone of the philosophy that underlies modern democracies. And what is the social contract? Because this is important to understand when I talk about lawful rebellion.
Right.
The social contract is an arrangement by which the members of society agree to abide by laws which do restrict their freedoms to some degree. They limit what you can do, but the purpose of that is for the benefit and smooth functioning of all, for the smooth functioning of society, for the benefit of all the individuals in the society, so that society runs by the rule of law.
Right.
And the contract is we yield up some of our autonomy so that we can have an orderly society where everyone gets a basic level playing field.
Now, autonomy, can you explain that one?
Well, autonomy is like your freedom of action to do whatever you want. Like, you might want to go into a supermarket and just grab whatever you like and take it. Or you might want to just drive through a red light. Well, okay, you know, we agree that there are certain principles like to do with property and behavior. Like, when you see a red light, you stop at the red light.
Yes.
Now, that does restrict your freedom to some degree, but we tend to agree that it's a good idea to have these principles in place, and we tend to agree that people who violate those need to be, there needs to be deterrence, and that's what the laws are. The laws are deterrence against violating those rules that are set up to make everything run efficiently and smoothly.
To keep you in line. Yeah. Keep you in
And we empower the government and the police to enforce those rules that we've all agreed on. And as long as the government and the police abide by those laws themselves, and that's very important. They have to abide by the laws themselves. They can't just apply the laws to us and then be above those laws. And they obviously have to tell the truth. They can't be hiding things from us about how they're applying the law. Everything has to be transparent, and they have to abide by the laws. As long as they do that, then we will submit to those laws ourselves, and we will generally carry on with our lives without making trouble. And I'm certainly one of those type of people. I would be happy to just let them administer the laws, let them take care of things, understand that there are some restrictions there that can be a bit annoying, but it's for the benefit of all. However, just let me finish, Jim, because I've got to get through this.
Go ahead.
Now, just let me finish my statement here, because when the rule of law is violated, when the social contract is violated by the actual arms of government that are put there to apply those laws and to enforce those laws, that's what's called breaking the social contract.
Breaching.
And according to breaching, you can call that if you want. Now, according to the philosophy of the political philosophy which underlies our society, when the social contract is broken, it is not just a right to rebel, it is your duty to rebel. And this brings me to my next point, is that it's not just that we have the right to protest, we have a duty and a responsibility when the social contract is broken to restore it. And that can actually require the use of force. And I think it needs to be graduated force. Because I don't agree with the use of force, because mainly because I don't think it's very effective.
No.
But there does come a point where you have to use it. For example, if a gang of thugs breaks into your home and starts, you know, smashing things and tries to rape your family, you have to use force against them.
Of course.
But at an earlier stage, if they're just standing outside the door, you try to talk to them. So that's how we apply dealing with breaches of the social contract as well. If the government is breaching the social contract, we have to first talk to them. So en masse, though, we have to mobilize as citizens en masse to stop it. And this brings me to my next point, which is absolutely important to get across, is that those who think that they can simply sit on the fence in a situation like this are not to be excused, are not to be treated by us as if that's an okay position to have. In Dante, in the Inferno, he says that there is a special place in hell for those who remain undecided in a time of moral crisis. And Another quote is that all it requires for evil to flourish is for good people to do nothing.
That's right.
And the people who at present are not taking a stand on issues that are clearly moral issues, that are very, very clear, are like the Germans who did nothing in Nazi Germany, the people who did nothing in Pol Pot's Cambodia, the people who currently are doing nothing to stop the transgressions or to counteract the illegal and immoral and deceptive conduct that is being conducted by our government and by the corporate government partnerships that are now running our society. It's our responsibility to do something about that. So I'm putting everyone on notice that if you think you can just say I'm sitting on the fence, and you know later on I want to talk about issues like climate change, because this is one where you can't just say I'm sitting on the fence about it. This is climate change is one of those issues where you've got to look at what's going on and understand it and then take action.
Well, first of all, you've used some words in these descriptions. Breach and break was one, right, Jack?
Yes, yep.
A breach is just when you get into it. You break a line. But when you break the line, that's when all hope is the contract is null and void.
Yeah. Well, what he's saying is that just don't sit on the fence.
That's right.
Use action.
That's between breaching and breaking. I think breaking is like more permanent.
That's correct. Yes. That's correct. Now, in the Declaration of Independence, which they actually read to make when they were writing the Constitution, in there it says the people have the right to change the government by fair or foul means.
And have yous done that? No. All right, well, let's go back. We'll come back. If any, give us a call, 9550-9552, and what Harold had just to say.
Illegal. They keep adding more things. They just keep making more and more shit illegal. And and they never take any laws off the books. They should have 10 laws in this country. That's a maximum of 10 laws. That's all they should be allowed to have. And you vote on a 900 number. So you can be a fat son of a bitch and still be a productive member of society. You do, 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 do. Then you'd have all the laws everyone agrees on, like rape and murder and burglary and assault. And then you could have half a dozen of the little bullshit mix and match laws. Don't sell drugs and wear a seatbelt. Don't masturbate on the bus and put on a helmet. And then when you want to add a new one, you're going to kick the least popular back to the people. Okay, I can't smoke in bars anymore, but I can jack off on the bus again. That way only a certain fraction of people are getting screwed at any given time on a rotating basis.
Girls, 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 girls. That's from the Beastie Boys back in 1987. That License to Ill. You're listening to Workers Radio Sydney. It is 10 past 7 o'clock. Sorry about the BBC News, but when you listen to biased broadcasting conspiracy, you kind of get a sick of it. But it's good to pick up on these things because then we can sort of rip it apart. And
well, that Doug Stanhope piece was actually highlighting the issues of the social contract being kind of turned into a joke by all these absurd little statutes and laws that are being passed, which we never agreed to.
Yeah.
So there is no contract. So, you know, he's actually making a good point, is if you're going to pass all these arbitrary laws, swap them around.
Yeah, kick the least one that's favourable.
Yeah, at least then it will seem a bit more reasonable to us. We'll feel like, well, you know, well, we brought in this unreasonable law. We're going to let go of one of the others this week.
Yeah, but now we've got so much. We're caged into this sort of like, well, nanny state, I guess. We just can't do anything. You can't even... Yes, Jim.
Well, what they do is they leave it there so that they can blindside you with that old law.
Yeah, but
in other words, I pick you up for, let's say, anything, nude, walking nude in public.
Well, interesting stuff that America's got those old laws that still hang around. Like, you can't have a hard-on in Arizona, can't you?
I don't know.
Really? In the whole state of Arizona?
Yeah, if you have a look at America's laws in different states, they've got some laws that are just absolutely... And this is Christian-based sort of laws that you can't have a hard-on in Arizona. You can't walk around with one.
Well, good luck to you.
How's those ones?
Ah, okay.
That's a bodily function.
Yeah. Huh? But, you know, people do put out these laws, and like you said, we have to get rid of them. I mean, someone who was off their face in that time said you cannot have a hard-on in Arizona.
Well, these days they just pass laws without consulting anyone.
Well,
that's the problem. Like, well, there's no social contract anymore because the government has become too powerful. The people have become too weak. A people of sheep will beget a government of wolves, and that's what we've got. Mm. We've got a population of sheep, and we've got a government of wolves. Can I just explicate what I was saying before about climate change, Jack? Because I was saying, cryptically, I said at the end of that last statement that the climate change issue is one that highlights the need for lawful rebellion. Now, a lot of people are going to go, what the hell is he talking about? Climate change? And a lot of people are going to think, that's just about conservation. That's just about the environment. What do you mean? Okay. Now, sorry, am I talking too loud?
No.
Too fast.
No, Jim, you're off your head. Keep going.
Okay. So, point to make is this, right? Now, I know a lot of people out there accept what the, official level of government information about climate is. A lot of people accept that, right? Mm. But if you've got your eyes open and you're not in a complete walking zombie state, you will be aware that there is a large contingent of scientists, highly educated, highly qualified people who have a completely divergent point of view from what the government position is on the climate, right? And when I hear people say things like, well, you know, I just can't make up my mind about this, and I'm just not sure about what I think about this climate change thing, and therefore I'll have no opinion, therefore I'll just sit on the fence, right? What you have to be reminded of is this fact, right, is that one side of the debate has all the power, has huge amounts of money, huge amounts of resources, and is enforcing upon you laws which will by force change the way you have to live your life, which will take money away from you, right? So you cannot have an I'm on the fence position about this. Sorry. You've got to get off the fence and either decide you agree with what the government says and then argue for it and be prepared to debate people like me, or look at the other side of the argument.
Yes.
And then realize that we've actually got the correct argument. But the people who are actually saying, well, I just can't make up my mind, la, 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 and therefore I'll do nothing, say nothing, have no point of view, be a sheeple, pay my carbon tax, you are enabling the people who want to bring in the carbon tax. You are effectively on their side. By saying you'll do nothing, by saying you're on the fence, you're not on the fence.
So it's like a drunk who's terrible at home, and if you don't say anything, if you don't give him tough love, then you're enabling him to drink more if you don't say anything.
Yes, the wife who allows the abusive husband to come home and beat the children is enabling the husband, and she is partly to blame for why he is doing that.
When you're sitting on the fence, you've got two ways to fall, correct? When you take a side, you've got nowhere to go except up. The people I know who are studying the science they have the same thing right down the line. 15,000-year change. We're going to get colder.
Well, look.
My sister in New York now is telling me about all the snow they're getting that they never had before in the city.
Correct. Look, there's a lot of evidence that contradicts the warming scenarios, but I don't want to come across as saying, hey, this is the truth, believe this, it's going to get colder, because that is, again, we don't know that. And the whole point is here is that you have a contingent of government and their lackeys in the departments and universities who are being part of this climate change lobby, which also has major banking cartels behind it, who are telling us that the debate is over, that that there is no debate, that you have to believe that it's only one way, and not allowing a different point of view to be even considered because they want to ram through laws and taxes. Mm. So my point is not that I'm going to try and prove, yes, it's going to get colder. No, I don't want to prove that. I don't want to prove it's going to get hotter. I don't want to prove it's going to get colder. All I want to prove is that there are two sides to the argument and that the argument is not settled. Therefore, we shouldn't have a tax. And keep arguing about it. Keep debating about it. That's fine. Mm. And have your point of view. But don't dare to bring in a tax. Don't insult us by bringing in a tax based on your lying, because you've one little group, one little crony group that you've promoted and are calling the consensus view is being promoted above all else.
Wait there, Jim, before you go. Yeah. Listen, look, and that's understandable, it's sitting on the fence, but Jean Reinhardt, have you heard of her?
I have not.
All right, so the thing is that the whole climate change thing has gone through media and stuff like this. Wait there, Jim. The thing is that Jean Reinhardt has put in 20% shares of the media for Fairfax. Now, you know what that means? That means that Jean Reinhardt is for against climate change. Do you know that? She pays people like Andrew Bolt and Alan Jones through the money. So she'll be lobbying against this. But the fact is that it doesn't matter what government or who you are in, it's the part of the thing is that... here we go. We've got someone who's on air. Listen. Good morning. You're on air.
Good morning. I've just been listening to what Jim's been saying about climate change.
Yep. Yep. Harrowood. Yep.
Agree entirely. Hang on. Climate change, right?
Yep.
Yes, I also wanted to note that there's a distinction between big government and bad government.
Yep.
There are a lot of people who call themselves libertarians now who are big on saying that we shouldn't have big government. Smaller government is good, and in fact, Tony Abbott's been saying that lately as well.
Yes,
there's
interesting.
There's a difference between bloated government that's essentially tyrannical,
yep,
and a large government, like Franklin Roosevelt, for example, that governs for the general welfare.
Mm.
So big infrastructure projects like the Snowy Mountain Scheme,
yep,
those do require government to put its foot forward and say, we're going to do this, you know, or we're going to go to the moon with an Apollo project,
yep,
that sort of thing. That's for the general welfare.
Mm.
Versus governments that step out of things and say, let's let the free market decide. And that's a real danger, because when you have small government to allow the free market to reign, then that's another form of tyranny, because a free market is a tyranny as well.
Yeah, good point. Very good point. Now, what do you think about climate change?
Oh, it's a fraud,
yeah,
and it's a genocidal fraud. The intention is to dismantle industrial civilization, to reduce the population, to reduce the carrying capacity of the world.
Mm. Well, we've seen that with America, actually, with the Bush. I guess they wanted the small government, and then you got the Democratic, where that's big government with, with the Obama, where... And this is with also here in Australia as well. And if Tony Abbott wants a small government, doesn't matter what Tony Abbott, and you're right, with free markets, tyranny anyway. Whoever owns the money runs the system. So,
well, that's right. And if you look at Obama's big government, that's really... even George Bush's so-called small government, both of them are bailing out the banks to the tune of trillions of dollars,
yep,
using taxpayers' money. So,
and the corporations that he involved with too, Mr. Bush, involved military organisations like Blackwater and stuff like that.
Yep.
It just went for hell forever. And
Can I just ask? Sorry, this is Harrowood. Sorry, who am I talking to?
My name's Dan.
Oh, Dan, hi. Look, can I just ask your opinion about what I was saying earlier about this on the fence position? Because what I believe is that the biggest hindrance we have to resolving this and sort of actually bringing back democracy is when people just say, oh, I'm on the fence, I can't make up my mind. And I think we need to actually, I mean, what's your opinion of that? Because it's very common in our society.
I missed what you were saying about that specifically, but there is a lot of that, and that's because of a lack of understanding of principles of government. And the purpose of government, why does government exist? And this goes back to that general welfare concept. So,
yeah, okay.
If you're under a government that is promoting a climate change fraud whose intention is to reduce the population, which is the same thing as genocide, then how could you be on the fence?
But I guess the point to make that I wanted to make is that there are scientific questions, and there is possibly a legitimate scientific debate about the role of CO2 in climate forcing. And my point is, I'm quite happy for scientists to argue about that till the cows come home. That is exactly what scientists should do. But my point is that when one side of the argument gets trumpeted as the only side of the argument to listen to, and the other side of the argument, they say, oh, well, they're not real scientists, ignore them, that is a complete bastardization of the scientific process, and it is an act of totalitarianism of a government to do that, and it's also dishonest. So yes. it breaks all kinds of moral and legal precepts to do that.
Well, you can only understand why they're demonising scientists who speak against climate change or who give their side of the argument, for example, the role of the sun, the role of cosmic radiation. The only reason they're being demonised, it makes sense when you understand the intention of the climate change theory, mm-hmm. Which goes back to what I keep saying, to what I said before. There is an agenda behind it. There are powerful interests behind this whole climate change juggernaut, and they've got a goal that they want to achieve because it's necessary for them to maintain their imperial system. They don't want nation states to rise up for the general welfare of the people, which is what the United States originally was when it fought against the British Empire and won, and then became a beacon of freedom and growth and prosperity to the whole world. And then the United States inspired Germany and Russia to do the same thing, and even Japan for a short time. And that's what the British Empire didn't want, and that's when they threw over the chessboard and started World War One and then World War Two again.
And now they've got the United Nations.
Now they've got the United Nations, and now they've got the climate change fraud as well. Now they've got the whole environmental movement. Nobody wants poisons in the rivers and a polluted atmosphere, but the climate change so-called debate isn't about solving those real environmental problems. It always comes back to reducing the food supply. Look what they're doing with the Murray-Darling Basin.
Yeah.
Tim Flannery. Let's get the population down to 6 to 9 million. I don't know what his real intentions or knowledge about this is, but to reduce the population from 22 to 6 to 9 million and to have an explicit policy to do that is the same thing. That's getting rid of 13 million people. Yeah. And people will say, well, that's just natural attrition, though. That's very different from the nasty genocide word. But to achieve natural attritional population reduction is essentially the same thing, because you need to put in place nasty conditions of living to discourage people from having children.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of people do that, and careers as well. A lot of people are discouraged about, having children, costs-wise and stuff like that. I think everyone should just breed and have children as much as you can. Why not? We're free.
and of course, this is part of an overall eugenics philosophy, which has been largely taken from an earlier phase in the first half of the 20th century, when large philanthropic foundations like the Rockefeller Foundation were actively involved in eugenics, unashamedly. They were eugenicists.
Well,
after the Second World War, that word became taboo because Hitler was a eugenicist, right?
Yeah.
So, and this is what Craig Isherwood talks about a lot, and I'm sure he'll be back on that subject when he comes on
in
today,
10 minutes,
is that the eugenics philosophy became morphed and merged into the environmental movement, but in a very, very subtle way that most people cannot recognize and most people would deny. I mean, most people will not admit it. I'm incredulous about it, and I still have trouble even believing it myself. It seems too ridiculous, but sorry, continue.
No, well, you're absolutely right. Adolf Hitler gave eugenics a bad name, so they had to change tack. And in fact, environmentalism is actually quite old. It goes back to the 19th century at least. And it started, that was actually at the foundation of the Fabian Society. The Fabian Society actually started with the Fellowship of the New Life, set up by Edward Carpenter, who was part of the British Empire. And he wrote a book called Civilization and Its Cure. So that book explained that civilization, to his mind, and to the British Empire's mind, who he represented, was actually a disease. Now, how do we cure this disease, which really meant industrial civilization, which was growing rapidly in the late 19th century, and there was huge optimism around the world about what we'll be able to do in the future. And so he set up this Fellowship of the New Life, and they thought, well, we need a political arm to actually put these ideas into action, and that's what the Fabian Society became.
And the Fabian Society is quite strong through the Labor government, has been through Gough Whitlam. Bobby Hawke was a member, and Julie Gillard, if you don't know, is a member of the Fabian Society. She goes to those gala nights all the time.
Oh, yeah, so is Kevin Rudd. A lot of them are.
Yeah, the Fabian Society, linked to the Masonic sort of the lodge that goes down that.
Fabians.
It's the same thing. It's just elite group. Well, it's a bunch of group think tank groups that are produced, like the Rhodes Scholars. Dan, thank you for your insight. It was quite good, and I'm sure the listeners would appreciate it. And if you've got any more concerns, give us a call.
No worries.
All right, thanks, Dan. And this one's going out to you, H.G. Wells, War of the Worlds.
No one would have believed in the last years of the 19th century that human affairs were being watched from the timeless worlds of space. No one could have dreamed we were being scrutinized as someone with a microscope studies creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. Few men even considered the possibility of life on other planets. And yet, across the gulf of space, minds immeasurably superior to ours regarded this Earth with envious eyes. And slowly and surely, they drew their plans against us.
As they would read a used car sales contract, they would never sign on to the system. For example, the draft covenant for human rights, for example, they list all of these wonderful privileges and rights which all mankind is going to have under the UN. And they're all there, you know, freedom of speech, religion, peaceful assembly, and all of these good things. Oh, you're not going to find the right to bear arms there, by the way. They don't have that one there. But all the others they've got listed. You say, well, okay, so all of these rights are guaranteed, right, by the UN. But continue reading, my friend, and you find out that in every case there's a clause that follows it and says, you may have this right, freedom of speech, for example, except as may be provided for by law. Well, what does that mean? That means you've got these rights until we pass a law that says you don't have these rights anymore. Or we say you can have these rights under some conditions and not other conditions. Every one of these so-called rights have that kind of a little gimmick following them, except as may be provided for by law, which means you haven't got them at all. You'll find those same clauses in the Soviet Constitution and in all of these totalitarian systems. They sound good to a casual reader, but when you really look at them carefully and read the fine print, you would never sign the contract. And so what we're facing today is a United Nations that has been sold to the average person of the world who wants peace. They're tired of war. They don't want the threat of war, atomic warfare, biological warfare. They don't want terrorism. They don't want crime. They don't want pornography. They don't want all of these bad things. And so they're told that the United Nations, if we just give it more power, more money, more military, more police, more rules, more laws, more regulations, that somehow they're going to take care of all of that for us. And the truth of the matter is, we're all going to wind up in a universal prison. The same financial cartel are the most influential people in the establishment of the United Nations, which is being offered to the people of the world as a means of preserving the peace and protecting the interest of the common man. The same kind of a charade is going on there. Remember that the United Nations land was donated by the Rockefellers. Why did they do that? Why did the Rockefellers donate land, for example, to a Sloan Kettering Institute in New York and then put three of their men on the board of directors? Why did they donate money for this great institution and that one and then load up the board of directors with their people? Why do they do that? It's because they want something. But it's not something that the average person is going to learn about by reading the newspapers. So the United Nations is a creation of these same people that created the Federal Reserve System.
Use your bed like a trampoline, I said. Higher, higher. Just for love, if you know what I mean, I said. Higher, higher. I'm what you desire, desire. I'm gonna take you higher, your car like a hot machine, I said. Higher, higher. Just for love, if you know what I mean, I said. Higher, higher. I'm what you desire, desire. I'm gonna take you higher, higher, higher. Hi, 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 hi.
There you go. That was Trampoline there by the greats. And before that, we had Edward Griffin's talking about the UN. You listen to Workers Radio Sydney on 88.9 Radio Skid Row. And we've got on the line with us Craig Isherwood from the Citizens Electoral Council. Craig, good morning. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, great. Thanks, Jack. Yourself?
Yeah, doing great. It's doing good. We're just talking a lot about laws and everything else here on Radio Skid Row. Mm-hmm. We've got Harold Fenton here with us from Truth News Radio and also Jimmy as well. Now, last time we were talking about a lot of stuff. Now, you've got a whole bunch of stuff that's coming up at the moment. It's called the ecosystems. Now, you've given me something that's quite interesting for our listeners. Ecosystem, a genocidal fraud.
A genocidal fraud.
Genocidal.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you mean by that one?
Okay, well, let's step back a bit just so we can explain. I can explain what we're talking about here.
Yep.
There's a lot of propaganda being pushed forward, and I think Harold knows about the fraud of the climate change debate, the whole global warming fraud. Well, all of this is being pushed on the science of ecosystems, of the idea that the current science shows that there is such a thing as global warming. But this is part of a bigger dynamic, and that is this whole idea that, of ecosystems. Now, ecosystems is a term that was cooked up in 1931 by a guy by the name of Arthur Tansley.
Right.
And it basically says that all of nature finds an equilibrium. And what we've actually showed in a DVD that we've produced, in great detail, mind you, is that this is actually a fraud. That the entire basis of, for example, the science behind the idea of shutting down the Murray-Darling food bowl, the fact that, you know, if they're taking nearly 3,000 gigalitres of water out of the Murray-Darling Basin in order to preserve the environment, in fact, preserve wetlands, is based upon the fraud of ecosystems of sustainability. And this was a fraud cooked up specifically by the British Crown, going back to the likes of Arthur Tansley. Now, we don't make these statements lightly, and we've actually came across, surprisingly, well, first of all, last year, and I know you've got a copy of this, we put out our new citizen newspaper that goes through, in particular, the whole issue of, in the back part of that paper, I actually talked about the Newosphere and the works of Vladimir Vernadsky, who was a guy that really talked about how ecology works, real ecology works, that the fact that the life on Earth governs the way that the entire biosphere operates, that there's higher forces, there's principles of life that govern the biosphere. Now, he was attacked by the very same British forces, people like Bertrand Russell, people like Julian Huxley.
Yeah, Julian.
And shut down.
Mm.
Now, what happened was, back in May last year, the BBC actually put out a program called All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace.
Okay.
It was put out by an acclaimed filmmaker, Adam Curtis. It was aired on the BBC in May and June of 2011.
Oh, Adam Curtis, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
He did the one about the Century of the Self?
Yes.
Yep,
fantastic.
That's one of his series. But he goes through, and like us, picks out this guy Arthur Tansley and shows how Arthur Tansley believed that the human mind operated like a machine.
Mm.
Now, and he also said that they worked on the hypothesis that the entirety of nature worked like a machine through mechanical properties. And it's just not true. And see, consequently, you've got ecologists on this DVD saying that when they went through the early part of their training, this idea of equilibrium in nature, this idea of the balance of nature, was a sacrosanct tenet of early ecology, but plain just was not true. And how they were blown apart, the fact that, you know, nature never returns to an equilibrium, it's always constantly changing. So what we've done here, and it really is very, very important for people to look at this, is we've blown apart the central tenets of the entire green debate, that there's such a thing as a balance of nature, that man is stuffing up the balance of nature, when there's no such thing. And we go through how specifically this was a direct operation from the British Crown down, through the formation of groups like the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, the World Wildlife Fund, the Nature Conservancy. All of these run out of the British Privy Council through people like Max Nicholson.
Mm.
We just actually lay it out for people, so that instead of just being bombarded with their opinions, or my opinion on this and my opinion on this, we actually document, show for people why it is that they're believing a crock of rubbish, while they've been programmed for the last 40 years believing that the entire environment debate has some sort of merit. So that's what we actually do in this DVD. So, you know, when you look at this particular issue, I mean, I was just blown away yesterday. I was reading an article called Climate Change Heretics Rebuff Carbon Dangers, which is a little bit what we've talked about before on your show, where you have, I don't know, it must be 30 different high-ranking scientists that have come out and basically, because there's a US election coming up, have said a candidate for the public office in any contemporary democracy may have to consider what, if anything, to do about global warming. Candidates should understand that the oft-repeated claim that nearly all scientists demand that something dramatic be done to stop global warming is not true. And he goes through, and is the author of these authors go through, reporting that, you know, this has become the witch hunt against climate scientists has become very similar to what happened in the Soviet Union under a guy by the name of Lyshenko, who was a biologist that basically lined his own pockets. But anyone that spoke against this biologist, Lyshenko, was actually shut down, put into gulags, you know, killed. And this is the sort of the nature of Russian science in that area in the early 1920s and 1930s, so in 1940s. So this is the sort of attack that we know happens in our country about any from any young climate scientist that wants to actually say, "Hang on, there's no evidence for this. This is a politically motivated, politically driven operation to basically shut down." World population growth. And actually, that's another thing we go through in the DVD. The formation of the Club of Rome was actually in 1972. This was a major propaganda campaign.
This is with Maurice Strong and the whole thing like that. Now, Maurice Strong's in China now. People are selling cars.
Well, see, the whole 1972 Club of Rome report, which forecast at that time that the world was going to be overpopulated and had to take... had to take drastic action, was based upon the work of a leading guy by the name of Jay Forrester in the United States, who was responsible for the setting up of the early warning radar systems in the United States through a series of big computers. Now, this guy believed that you could control all of nature if you understood it by recognizing these things called feedback loops. So he set about putting these feedback loops into his models in these computers, and then set about trying to make a model of society through using feedback loops. But what was interesting is that computers became the way that that these so-called scientists tried to model and mimic and copy, replicate nature. And it was through this modeling where they put in very limited parameters.
Right.
Come up with these reports to say, you know, by the year 2010 or the year 2050, you know, the world's going to be overpopulated. Now, this is all based upon mathematical, statistical assumptions and modeling through these new machines called computers, but the intention behind it, as I go back to before, is this idea of overpopulation and population control, which is actually at at the forefront of what the British Empire has been trying to do all along.
Yeah, the old Prince Philip wanting to reduction.
Exactly him.
Yeah, Murray Darling, you want to say something?
Can I just make a thought experiment to illustrate the concept of what Craig was talking about how there is no such thing as a natural balance that is, I guess, absolute, and that there is only dynamic equilibrium, and that basically any state that we find nature in is as good as any other. And just, I want to give this experiment. Imagine that you decide you're not going to take the garbage out at home anymore, and you're just going to basically let it all pile up, and then you decide, look, I'm not even going to use the toilet anymore. I'm just going to, you know, just do whatever I, you know, I'm just not going to do what I normally do in my home, okay?
Right.
Now, what will happen is that the quality of your environment in your home will deteriorate from the point of view of an average person, average human being. You walk in, it's going to stink, it's going to be full of garbage, it's going to be unpleasant, right? Now, from the point of view of an ecology kind of viewpoint, well, actually, you've created a new ecology in your home. What you've done is, you know, all of that garbage and stuff you've strewn around, there'll be little bugs crawling around in there and having a good time, cockroaches. And from your point of view, it'll, you know, or for maybe you like it, but most people would think, oh, it's horrible. Okay, you've ruined the environment. You know, you've destroyed the environment of the home. Mm. Well, the home doesn't have any natural environment. We choose to keep the home clean. We choose to use toilets to make our, you know, waste go away from us. and we like to have clean smells because we choose it because we want it, not because one is right and the other is wrong. There is no right or wrong in this. It's what we want. So just bringing that back to the environment that we actually live in, of course, if you pollute the rivers and you put industrial waste, you're going to create an unpleasant situation. That doesn't mean it's right or wrong. It means, do you want it? Do you want to have that? If you don't want to have it, don't do it. But I think the problem with the ecology and environmental argument is they say there is one right way, and then there is this is wrong, and then they say we are giving you the right way. But then they introduce their own furphies into it, like they say carbon dioxide is wrong, which of course illustrates the flaw in their whole thinking. I don't know. What do you think about that, Craig?
Well, I was going to give Craig a little history lesson. That's how old I am, if it's all right.
Yeah.
Craig, I took zoology in 1963.
Right.
Oh, my God, he's old. And they were just starting to push those words, ecosystems, you know, the ecology. The
buzzwords like
sustainable. Yeah, buzzwords. Mm. And you had to, everybody was so amazed by these words, and they took it to be God's word.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, this is because there is an intention top down, starting in the late 50s, by the British Crown, of using environmentalism, ecology, all this entire idea to push population control and the destruction of the sovereignty of nation states, which we go through in this DVD. See, I like Harewood's idea of that little thought object, because, see, if you expand that, Harewood, and you look at what took place, for example, in the idea of developing the biosphere or developing nature, just have a look around the Griffith-Leeton area where, you know, people go to the shops and they've been buying rock melons lately. Well, that's where all our rock melons are coming from, because 100 years ago, that was barren desert. And there was a decision, say, well, let's create something out of this desert. Let's create a food bowl. So, therefore, you have the construction of the Murray-Darling Basin irrigation scheme, which turned that environment from a desert into a food bowl. Now, this was done purely by water, and the construction by man of dams, of channels, canals, and so forth. Now, there's arguments, you know, the technology created salinity and all this sort of stuff. But look, whenever you begin to alter or change the environment, yeah, you come up with problems. So what you do is you develop the higher technologies necessary to solve certain problems that come along. Like, for example, you use drip irrigation, you use, instead of flood irrigation, and you use plastic mulching in order to preserve water. You do all sorts of things. And over the last 20, 30, 40 years, you've seen breakthroughs in technology to overcome some of the maybe what could have been considered poorer practices at the level of technology you had 40 or 50 years ago in order to solve the problems. But see, the intention here is, and was, you know, back in the 100 years ago when the Murray-Darling Basin was being used and developed as an irrigation area, was to create food for people. That's what you did. This was before this massive population reduction campaign of the British Empire, which did start in the late 50s and 60s, but it was a continuation of what was known as the eugenics movement of Britain going back into the late 19th century. And you'll find that Arthur Tansley was a proponent of eugenics. This was that there was a master race, and that, you know, everyone else was basically inferior.
Mm.
And it also gloved into the ideology of the British Empire to say the only real race that could that was fit to govern the world was the white. Well, were white races. Forget about the yellow, brown, black, and red races. Who cares about them? And actually, you'll see quotes in this DVD about, you know, people are like the name. People are actually saying that. This was actually a policy issue. So,
all right.
The point is that we have a choice to change things. We actually have a capability of transforming our environment for the better.
Yeah.
And quite often, the large polluters are not the mum and dads, the small people out there. It's the large multinational corporations that are run specifically top-down by the British Empire or are involved in it. And you can look at large corporations right throughout history, like Australian Agricultural Company. These people don't care about how they destroy the local environments because they're not concerned about the people that live in those particular areas or countries.
All right. Well, listen, we'll go into a song there, Craig Isherwood with the Citizens Electoral Council. Ecosystems is the new DVD, but we'll be back. Just hold on for a sec there, Craig, for us. Dog by a Japanese band called Futon. Listen to Workers Radio Sydney on 88.9 Radio Skid Row. We're here with Harold Fenton from Truth News Radio, Jim, myself, Jack Frost, and we got from the Citizens Electoral Council, Craig Isherwood. Thanks for coming on Radio Skid Row. Again, it is 10 past 8. Now, Harold, what was that question that you were going to ask, Craig? How do you get
Craig?
Yeah.
My question is this, and I've been talking about this earlier on the show. We need to figure out how we can get people off the fence. Now, by that, I simply mean that so many people in our country have an attitude where they just say, look, I don't know about climate change. You know, there's two points of view. I haven't made up my mind, therefore I'm not going to have an opinion. But, of course, one side of the opinion is overbalancing the other. Sorry, I don't have my headphones plugged in right now. I'm just going to plug them in.
Yep, there you go. Craig?
Yeah.
What do you think of what Harold had to say about it?
Well, there's two things here. First of all, you know, you're talking about a population that's been blasted by the media and along propaganda lines that it's been so intense that most people give up and say, well, how can I change anything? That's why we put this DVD out, because what it does is it challenges and shows people how they've been lied to. Now, not everyone in the community is going to respond to it, but you're going to get some intelligent people that say, damn it, I've been lied to. What can I do? And then they have to be channeled to be able to do something in order to be able to fight. And that's why we started a political party, you know, 22 years ago, which doesn't just, you know, park people or say, join us as a political party and sit on the sidelines and we'll do everything for you. In fact, we say, no, get involved, become part of a campaign, continuous campaign, to fight for the sovereignty of our nation. So, you know, for example, on this particular DVD, we've also put out a release that points to why this is so important. So we want to get a million flyers of small A4 flyers out, a million of those things right around the country, so we can actually intersect and find people that want to actually find out what the truth is about the fraud of this environmentalist green movement. And so they can get fired up and fight. And you only have to have a relatively small handful of the population up in arms, and you have a revolution, a peaceful one. Because it was only 1-2% of the American population that actually fought for the American Revolution. But if we had 1-2% of our population up in arms, which is what we're trying to create, then you'll have real political change. People seem to think that you have to have, you know, masses, you know, 50-60% of the population up in arms. Well, right now, with the carbon tax coming down in July, with the increase in the cost of living based upon the transfer of wealth out of the hands of governments, and particularly utilities owned by government into private enterprise, so that you're seeing
corporate fascism.
Sorry?
Corporate fascism.
Yeah, exactly. Corporate fascism and privatisation, well, ripping the money out of people through, you know, quasi taxes, like the increase in the price of electricity.
Yeah, and that's happening a lot. The amount of vouchers, electricity vouchers, are going through the poor at the moment has just gone through the roof because of the electricity prices that have steeped up. And they say, well, we're doing a $48 billion upgrade on the electricity grid. And they tell you stories like that. But what's interesting is Gina Reinhart, the mining magnate woman, is going to buy 10% of Fairfax Media. Now, she'll have a political say in this, right?
Yeah.
Now, she puts out people like Andrew Bolt for against climate change. Now, what do you think about... if Abbott gets in, obviously they're going to go for they're going to run, and the media through Fairfax is going to run for Abbott. If Gina Reinhart buys 10%, she'll be lobbying for that. She'll be paying people to do the lobbying work. Abbott's not going to change. It doesn't matter who's in government, does it? They're still going to have the tax. It's still under Crown.
Well, that's the point, is that you're going to the same direction of government policy, because both of them have committed to the same fundamental ideas. I mean, the coalition did support the idea of carbon trading under John Howard. It just wasn't politically expedient at that point.
That's right.
And of course, you know, the Gillard government has been pushing this, because top down, that's what has to be pushed as part of the British Crown.
Well, she's done that, and the Queen and Philip came over for a nice little visit to give her a nice ritual shake hand and say thank you very much. Now, Abbott was going to say, and if Abbott does get in, and probably does because Gillard look like they're just shooting potholes at her, Abbott's going to go in. He's not going to promise that he's going to change the tax.
Nah.
If he doesn't, they'll get rid of him and they'll put Malcolm Turnbull in. Would that be correct, you reckon?
That's right. I mean, Malcolm Turnbull's been pushing and lobbying for a carbon trading scheme since day one, and consequently, you know, Tony Abbott's basically a seat warmer for the powers behind the Liberal Party.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter, you know, people are going to vote for the Labor or Liberal Party. We get the same policies, haven't we? This has happened for the last, you know, 50 years. You get the same policies.
Yeah.
And this is where, you know, the politics in Australia is controlled.
Mm-hmm.
Under the two-party compulsory preferential voting system,
mm-hmm.
you control the political system. If you had optional preferential voting, the system will completely change because you don't have to vote for people you don't want. Now that's a big controversy when you start to say that, because you know the people within the power that hold the power in the system don't want people to have as much choice as possible. If you went to the polling booth and said, "I know you'd like that fella, I'll vote for him," and then said, "I don't like the rest," you've got no option. You've got to give your preferences in the base on who you don't want, not who you do want.
Yeah, and a lot of people do that. I've had people on with the federal election for different smaller groups, like you know, the Socialist Alliance, stuff like that. They have to give preferences to the Greens and stuff like that, no matter what. One of them gave preference of all in one all quarters.
Yeah, when it gets to the Senate, it's an absolute nightmare. It's almost impossible to direct your preferences. It's just like a lottery. And from a registered political party that's been involved in this a lot, it's almost impossible. At the end of the day, you have to make a choice. Do you want the Labor, Liberal or Greens to get your preferences? And you have to construct your ballot paper or how to give people a sense of how to vote. From that point of view, it's never got to do with, you know, if you want that particular person because they stand for good policies to get in. At the end of the day, under the compulsory voting system, the compulsory preferential voting system, you find that you get the people that you don't want, even if you try and vote opposite to that.
To get rid of the crown.
Yeah.
Get rid of them. Or destroy them.
Start attacking the system.
Yeah, exactly. Now, we'll just go in there. Craig Ishwood from Citizen Electoral Council. You can go to cecaust.com.au. Now, you can ring us up on 9550-9552. He's got a new DVD out. They've got a new DVD, Ecosystems, the Genocidal Fraud. These are interesting DVDs, people. This is better than your usual crap on TV. You could put it on, and then you could sit there and watch it. And get educated.
1-800-636-432. Yep. Way of getting it to people.
What's the number again?
1-800-636-432. Give us a call on that. Talk to our admin staff and they'll shoot one out to you.
All right. Thanks there, Craig.
Thanks, Craig. It's great talking to you.
Good on you. Cheers, mate. There you go. We'll be back. Radio Skid Row. This song's going out to... well, actually, this one's going out to you, Harold.
Cheers. Apparently everyone knows that I'm insane. I didn't know that everyone knew, but now that they know, I don't care. You've been listening to Skid Row Radio Breakfast Show, and we'll be bringing you more of those over the next few weeks or months or years, depending on how long I get to stay in there before they come and chuck me out. Well, it's been great. Hope you enjoyed it. I certainly did. And we'll be back with Truth News Radio again this week with more shows.
and we look forward to your comments and criticisms on our website. See you next week.